I'm Montse Alvarado. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
This new amendment that we're dealing with now removes the ban on taxpayer funding for abortion and removes all parental rights.
Another state seeks to enshrine a right to abortion in the state constitution. We dive into the Colorado ballot measure.
Their hearts are made for love. Their minds are made for the truth. And the Biology Body just kind of gives them both at the same time.
Educating our youth on honoring our bodies and how to have conversations about sexual intimacy with them. Jason Everett talks theology of the body.
I'm Alan Holdren here at a Pregnancy Resource Center in Beloit, Kansas. Abortion numbers in the state of Kansas are at an all-time high. But pro-lifers across the state are stepping up to provide on-the-ground support to mothers and babies. That story ahead.
In the race for the White House, the pro-life movement seems to be losing the little ground it had. The Democratic Party has fully embraced abortion with no limits on gestation. And the Republican Party is slowly stepping away from protecting life. We saw more on that just last weekend. Speaking on Meet the Press on Sunday, Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance said that if former President Trump is elected in November and a national abortion ban reached the White House, President Trump would veto it. The Catholic senator from Ohio added Donald Trump wants to end the culture war on this particular topic. If California wants to have a different abortion policy than Ohio, then California needs to respect Ohio, and Ohio has to respect California. His words come just after former President Trump posted on Truth Social on the last day of the Democratic National Convention, which spoke endlessly about so-called abortion rights, that his administration will be great for women and their reproductive rights. Chicago authorities are investigating an attack on a pro-life pregnancy clinic that happened on the last day of the DNC. The center called Aid for Women was vandalized at 3 a.m. on Friday morning. Red paint was splashed on one window. Spray paint covered the other with references to Gaza. And a substance was used to cover the door locks, which prevented the center from opening. Several appointments were forced to cancel.
We have served thousands of women and thousands of their children over the years, and just heartbreaking to me to see that vandals would attack a center that is really apolitical, that had nothing to do with the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Aid for Women manages 8 pregnancy centers and runs 2 maternity homes where women can stay free of charge for up to 3 years. During the Democratic National Convention, Planned Parenthood offered free chemical abortion pills and vasectomies. Democrats for Life, however, offered free diapers. They tell us they were able to deliver more than 40,000 diapers to pregnancy centers across the city of Chicago. In New York, a federal judge has blocked the state attorney general from pursuing fraud charges against 3 pregnancy clinics. Attorney General Letitia James targeted pro-life pregnancy centers for promoting and providing the abortion reversal pill. The judge found that James was violating the center's free speech rights. Alliance Defending Freedom, who argued on behalf of these pro-life organizations, celebrated the move, saying in part that women should have the option to reconsider an abortion. The court was right to affirm the pregnancy center's freedom to tell interested women about this life-saving treatment option. We continue to follow abortion ballot initiatives in the states that will be voted on this November. In Nebraska, locals have competing measures to expand abortion rights or limit them. One proposal would write current pro-life protections, a 12-week ban with exceptions for rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother, into the state constitution. The other would enshrine a constitutional right to abortion until the point of viability or to protect the health of the mother. In Colorado, where taking the life of the preborn is currently legal during all stages of pregnancy, there's a measure to enshrine a right to abortion in the state constitution. It would also require Medicaid and private health insurers to cover the procedure. Brittany Vesley, the executive director of the Colorado Catholic Conference, represents the bishops on the board of the Vote No campaign. Brittany, welcome to the show. How do Catholics in Colorado feel about abortion?
Oh, Colorado has had several major abortion statutorily laws that allow for abortion all the way up to the moment of birth. But this new amendment that we're dealing with now removes the ban on taxpayer funding for abortion and removes all parental rights for their children. If they decide to have an abortion, parents won't be able to know, including a constitutional right for abortion up to the moment of birth. This goes way too far. Catholics are very upset, but so are many other Coloradans that do not share the faith.
And what is it that the bishops are doing then to try to get more information out and to let the laity know what is happening here?
The bishops are supporting the No campaign against the right to abortion measure that'll be on the ballot this November. That's financially as well as requiring pastors to speak about the amendment at parishes before, after ballots drop and before the election itself. We'll be having a video that's shared at parishes. We're really making an effort to mobilize parishioners and our Catholic faithful to engage in this election process, as well as support the broader campaign to move some of those moderate pro-abortion Democrats who think that this goes too far, because we need them to vote as well this November.
Now, you talked about some of these extreme things that the ballot initiative does. How does enshrining a right to abortion in the state constitution change the landscape of abortion in Colorado and what you can and can't do? Does this affect the church's ability to minister or even to help women who think they don't have another option?
By creating a constitutional right to abortion, no pro-life legislation can be passed in the state of Colorado until another constitutional amendment is passed that removes that constitutional right. It also removes our 1984 prohibition on taxpayer funds subsidizing abortion. And if we look at what happened in Oregon with their annual $15 million allocation, it is very likely that if this passes in Colorado, Colorado will pass in January an allocation that will be millions of dollars for abortion for in-state and out-of-state women. So as these pro-life states are passing pro-life laws, many women from those states could be funded by the state of Colorado to come for late-term abortion on healthy mothers and healthy babies in the state of Colorado if this passes. But we have a path to victory, and it needs to happen now.
Well, tell me a little bit more then about how it does impact pro-life advocacy, pro-life pregnancy centers in the state, or any way of supporting women and mothers.
Pregnancy centers were brought into this conversation a real way when last year's Senate Bill 190 targeted them for false advertising. So pregnancy centers are now at the table. The pro-life coalition has unified for the first time in a real way in the state of Colorado. Over 50 organizations are part of Pro-Life Colorado as a C3, C4, and an issue committee going up against this campaign. And it's a leviathan against Planned Parenthood. As you know, Monse, that the pro-abortion lobby is a stronghold in the state of Colorado, and it's also working in a lot of pro-life states like Arizona and Florida as well.
Well, we're looking forward to watching the outreach that you will do and praying for your success. Thank you so much, Brittany.
Thank you, Monse.
A ballot measure in Florida would remove the state's 6-week abortion ban and allow abortion without restriction up to the point of viability and beyond if the patient's health care provider gives approval. Pro-life advocates are encouraging Floridians to vote no on Amendment 4. The Archbishop of Miami, Thomas Wenske, hopes to reach beyond the boundaries of his archdiocese and remind all voters that abortion is not a religious issue, but a human rights issue.
We're trying to reach out beyond the Catholic community and tell all people of goodwill to vote no on 4. And even those that would define themselves as pro-choice, there's ample reasons for them to vote no on 4.
Abortion could be allowed all the way up to the moment of birth, and minors could get abortions without parental consent if Amendment 4 passes. According to pro-life advocates, the Archdiocese of Miami is rolling out a media campaign to spread their message. EWTN News' Mark Irons traveled to Florida to dive further into the ballot initiative there, and we'll have more on this measure on Friday evening's airing of EWTN News In Depth. That's Friday at 8 p.m. and again on Sunday at 11. And don't forget to check out the Catholic News Agency's interactive map on state abortion ballots. Head over to CatholicNewsAgency.com and scroll to the bottom.
The reality is, across the country, and Ohio included, you see courts putting their thumb on the scale against parents.
Parental rights, a growing concern for families across the United States as more laws are being passed that seem to take away the fundamental right of a parent to decide what their child is exposed to and the very health care they receive. Parents are fighting back, however, launching lawsuits of their own to gain back control of the influences over their children, particularly in school settings. On July 15th, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill into law that prohibits school districts from having parental notification policies. It stops staff from notifying parents if their child identifies as non-binary or transgender, or if students ask for access to bathrooms of the opposite gender. A day later, the Liberty Justice Center filed a lawsuit against the legislation on behalf of the Chino Valley Unified School District and several Californian parents with children in the state's public school system, saying school officials do not have the right to keep secrets from parents, but parents do have a constitutional right to know what their minor children are doing at school. Many people would agree that parents have a fundamental and constitutional right and duty to guide the upbringing, education, and health care of their children. In Ohio, lawmakers are considering a bill that would encourage more parental involvement in their child's education, but it is facing opposition. We spoke with those involved in the bill to learn more about it.
We want to have transparency in our classrooms and in our schools throughout Ohio.
Transparency. The word is often used politically to promote accountability for government agencies. It's considered a positive practice. Lawmakers in Ohio, including Representative Sarah Carruthers and Representative DJ Swearingen in the State House, want to bring that transparency to the education system.
This has been about a two-year project here in Ohio where the goal is to get parents more involved in their kids' education.
Ohio House Bill 8, or the Parents' Bill of Rights, would require public schools in the state to notify parents on sexual health education provided to their children, including disclosing, quote, sexuality content, that they define as any oral or written instruction, presentation, image, or description of sexual concepts or gender ideology. The bill also states that school districts must ensure that any sexuality content is age and developmentally appropriate. But not all lawmakers in the Ohio State House were in support of this bill during voting in June of last year.
It will prohibit teachers from talking about LGBTQ+ issues, even if it is part of a valid lesson or important subject matter from all viewpoints. A hateful bill that targets children for being who they are.
The Parents' Bill of Rights, as is not anti-LGBTQ.
School is supposed to be a safe zone because sometimes you don't always have the parents to go talk to about stuff.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Ohio is coining House Bill 8 as, quote, the Unsafe Students Act, which they say eviscerates the trusted relationships between students and their teachers or faculty members. The ACLU of Ohio says that the bill puts LGBTQ+ students' safety at risk because they say it chills conversations about sexual orientation and gender identity. But Representative Sarah Carruthers says it really all boils down to the rights of parents.
Let me state again for the record, Representative Swearingen and I did not have the intention to make this legislation against any group or any person. We truly are just parents ourselves that care about helping other parents and their children. There is no hidden agenda here.
Actually, the bill, when it passed the House, it didn't ban any type of curriculum or any type of conversation. It simply said that, you know, if there's any type of sexually oriented conversations going on in schools, that parents are made aware of those conversations, that they're involved with those conversations.
Ohio House Bill 8 says that if a parent doesn't feel comfortable with a certain education concept being taught to their child, they can opt their child out of that class.
The premise is that when parents are involved, statistically, kids always do better. And we want to encourage that parent-child relationship inside the classroom as much as we can.
Organizations supporting the bill say it's imperative that the rights of parents are established in law.
We have courts running amok on parents' rights right now.
Aaron Baer of the Center for Christian Virtue, which is advocating for the passage of HB 8, says the alarming examples of parents losing guardianship are reason enough to support this legislation.
We had a pretty infamous case in Ohio back in 2018 where a court removed a child from their parents' custody because the parents would not consent to putting their daughter on high-dose testosterone. And what this bill does is restore the rightful balance and say, no, listen, these decisions, first and foremost, the court should defer to the parents.
Again, Ohio House Bill 8 passed the House in June of last year. It's currently in the Senate. Representative Swearengen says he hopes to see it pass the state Senate this coming November. In 2021, the state of Ohio updated their sex education guidelines to stress abstinence or sexual risk avoidance education be taught in middle and high schools. The program requires instruction that stresses that students should abstain from sexual activity until marriage. It teaches the physical, psychological, emotional risks and social side effects of participating in sexual activity outside of marriage and the harmful consequences of conceiving children out of wedlock. Sexual risk avoidance differs from programs Planned Parenthood may offer, like sexual risk reduction.
Planned Parenthood takes a very defeatist ideology with these programs that says that, well, kids are going to have sex anyway, so we just should move past an abstinence conversation and just start talking about contraception, start talking about sexual practices, different sexual practices they can be experimenting with and things like that. I mean, it's pretty grotesque, the things that they bring into the classroom and the success we've seen in these school districts that have adopted sexual risk avoidance, the lower teen pregnancy rates, the lower rates of unhealthy sexual practices and leading to things like venereal diseases and things like that.
There are 1.7 million students in Ohio. Right now, according to the Centers for Disease Control, 43% of children in the state are born outside of wedlock. Sexual risk avoidance education programs focus on the whole child and aim to emphasize healthy decision making and empower youth to honor their bodies. This concept isn't new. Pope St. John Paul II devoted more than 100 weekly talks from 1979 to 1984, reflecting on the meaning of the human body, sexual desire, and the sacrament of marriage. Those teachings came to be called the theology of the body. At their heart, they help us to see our bodies as gifts and the interconnected beauty of the human person, the Catholic understanding of human sexuality, and the sacrament of marriage. Jason Everett, co-founder of the Chastity Project, host of the Lust is Boring podcast, and international Catholic speaker, is here to tell us about his newly updated Theology of the Body program called Envision. I've got the books for Theology of the Body Envision program right here. They are comprehensive. Tell us more about it, Jason.
Yeah, well, we initially created a program for high school kids called Theology Body for Teens, and then years later came out with one for middle school students. But about 10 years has passed since then, and you might have noticed a few things have changed in culture in the last decade. And so we thought, okay, we probably need to update this for the sake of the kids, also for the parents and the educators. So what we did is completely revamped the entire program to take John Paul's timeless wisdom of the theology of the body and bring it down to the level that a 6th, 7th, or 8th grade kid could really take advantage of to find what God's plan is for their life.
Now, Jason, you've been doing this for a long time. How do students react to this content?
They're unbelievably receptive to it. Like, people think we have a hard job selling chastity and theology body to teenagers, but that's like thinking you'd have a hard job giving away filet mignons in a homeless shelter. And what I mean by that is that they're starving for this. Their hearts are made for love. Their minds are made for the truth. And theology body just kind of gives them both at the same time. So it's John Paul's approach. It isn't just this, you know, heavy-handed litany of regulations and rules. It more argues from the inside out. Like, what is it you really long for? And it isn't just like Catholic sex ed. The theology body is, who am I? And how should I live? And so it unpacks that in a way that really is applicable to a junior high kid and all the stuff they're facing today.
Right, as they're searching for identity and trying to figure out who they are and how that applies to the rest of their lives. Are you only in Catholic schools?
Predominantly in Catholic schools, because sometimes when people hear, oh, Pope this or Saint that, they're not as interested. Now, I do chastity talks in public schools, and, you know, I did a chastity talk at a Catholic school in England that was 95% Muslim, which was interesting.
Wow.
But this curriculum is intended for the Catholic schools, the parishes, homeschooled. And one of the things that I really like about it is, as you know, junior high kids are all over the map. There's some sixth grade homeschool kids where some of these sensitive subjects are not even on the radar. Then there's eighth grade kids in some schools that really could have used this thing years ago. So how do we present one body of content to kids for which it might not be age appropriate? The sensitive stuff we put kind of in an appendix in the videos. So if your kids need to hear this, play that video. But if they don't need to hear it, and it's just going to introduce moral questions that aren't on the radar, you don't have to show it. And that way, whether they're homeschooled in sixth grade or in a tough situation, getting ready to go into high school, we've got the content built into the program.
Now, what you're talking about there really is that accompaniment and that discernment that only a parent can do that knows their child so well. Why is it so important for them, the children, to hear the truth from their parents instead of letting their peers and the culture distort the truth?
Yeah, well, parents aren't just the primary sex educators of the kids. Parents are the primary evangelists of the kids. And so they need to hear it from the parents and, most importantly, see it in the parents. So our kids won't always obey us, but they'll never fail to imitate us, which means if I want my kids to obey the church's teachings on sexuality and chastity, I should probably live that out myself. And then they're more likely to catch it because all the virtues, whether it's courage or honesty, are more easily caught than they are taught. And so we need to model these things as parents and then speak.
Now, Jason, you recently spoke at the National Eucharistic Congress. We were together there, and you discussed the differences between sexes. Let's take a quick listen.
You have to speak 8 decibels louder for the male brain to register speech at the same level the female brain will register speech. Our ears are different. Our eyes are different. You know, women can actually see shades of color that are indistinguishable to men. Look at the beauty of the difference.
I love that. We seem to have lost the beauty of our differences between men and women. How do we recover this celebration of our differences? And is this one of the biggest challenges you face today in the classroom? That's a mixed classroom.
Yeah, well, I do find they do learn differently. I think if you want a woman to really listen and absorb what you're saying, you need to make her feel understood. If you want a man to kind of respond, I think you need to make him feel needed for a task. And so many years, we've looked at our male-female differences through almost like a Marxist lens of competition, and we need to erase the differences so that we can be one. It's like, no. Our differences don't reveal some battle of the sexes, tit-for-tat competition. It reveals complementarity. And this is baked into the theology of the body, that in your body is stamped at your call to love, because you are created to make a gift of yourself. It is undeniable. It's stamped into our bodies. And so God has kind of placed within us his call of who we are and how we should live.
Absolutely unrepeatable. Jason, well, you are unrepeatable. Thank you so much for what you're doing. We're so grateful for you.
Keep up the great work.
Awesome. For more information on Jason Evert's newly updated program, Envision, Theology of the Body for Middle School, go to ascensionpress.com/envision. That's ascensionpress.com/envision. When we return, the pro-life movement may have lost at the ballot box in Kansas 2 years ago, but that's not stopping supporters from helping the pro-life cause. Stay with us. In November, many voters will be casting ballots on abortion measures. 2 years ago this month, a majority of Kansas voters voted against a pro-life law that would have provided greater protections for the unborn in the state. But as Alan Holdren tells us, pro-lifers aren't giving up.
Today, we are very blessed to have participants who are volunteering through the Kansans for Life Service Day for Pregnancy Care Centers.
On August 2nd, 2 years to the day after Kansan voters failed to pass the Value Them Both Amendment, volunteers rolled up their sleeves to help pregnancy resource centers.
it can be a very discouraging time, especially with different decisions and things that are coming up in our legislatures. And so I think that encouragement just helps us to know that it's worth what we're doing.
Alice Thompson runs Heart Choices. They have 4 locations in the area and helped bring more than 100 children into the world last year alone. She says the pro-life movement in Kansas needs rebuilding after the amendment defeat.
We really do need to stand up, and we need to recognize our centers and what they are doing for moms, especially for those moms who are maybe undecided about the fate of their baby, maybe not pleased with their unplanned pregnancy, and offering them support and positive options. But it's important that not just the pregnancy centers do this alone, but the whole culture of life needs to be built in Kansas.
7 volunteers and more staff turned out for this year's event at Heart Choices in Beloit. Across the state, hundreds of volunteers lent a hand at least 22 different pregnancy resource centers. The outpouring is bittersweet. The amount of support for pregnancy resource centers in Kansas is rising, but the numbers of abortions in the state have skyrocketed too, to about 3 times as many last year as in 2019.
The state hasn't released official numbers, but the Guttmacher Institute has put projections that show that there have been almost 24,000 abortions performed in Kansas. So we really are a destination state for abortion tourism, abortion travel from other states. So the pregnancy resource centers, being the front line of the pro-life movement right now, really are our best chance to help reach women.
Kansans for Life director Peter Northcott is among those on site in Beloit, too, doing his part to assist those on the front lines.
Studies both done by pro-abortion sources and sources that are more fair-minded, I'd say, will show that most women would rather choose not to have an abortion if there was another alternative.
Something as small as the baby gate he's putting in here today is part of a bigger plan.
This day of service, coupled with our educational efforts, coupled with the legislation that we're passing, it just shows that you just keep moving. I think in Kansas, that's what we've continued to do. And I think it is a lesson for states across the country that are going to be having ballot initiatives. We will win this battle in the long term. The only way the abortion industry wins is if we give up, and we're not giving up.
Every effort of the movement seeks to reclaim Kansas as a pro-life state. In Beloit, Kansas, Alan Holdren, EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
And that does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Follow us on X, Facebook, and Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.